Welcome to the Faculty of Humanities and Social Science Research Podcast Series at the University of Nottingham, Ningbo, China, the first Sino-foreign university. I'm Dr. Mary Jane Ainslie, Associate Professor in International Communications.
And I'm Dr. Derek Irwin, Associate Professor of Applied Linguistics. We're coming to you from the Language and Pedagogy Laboratory here at the Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences.
For this edition of the series, we are delighted to be joined by Professor Catriona Morrison. Catriona was appointed as the Dean of the Faculty of Humanities and Social Science in January 2024. Prior to joining UNNC in 2024, she held several leadership positions, most recently as Dean of Science at the University of Law, where she instituted the Science School, which delivered programs in psychology, computer science, criminology, policing, and education.
So it's important to note that she's our boss. We'll be very, very kind to her today.
Yeah,
right?
Best behavior, Derek.
Okay, okay? I'll try my best.
Yeah, no goofing.
Okay.
No goofing this week. Yeah.
Catriona obtained her MA from the University of Glasgow and her DPhil from the University of York, and she was specializing in psychology. Her publications include topics such as language development, dementia, internet behavior, and childhood and adult memories. Catriona is also a past chair of the British Psychological Society's Educational Board and a chartered psychologist, as well as a fellow of the British Psychological Society.
In 2019, Catriona published the paper, The Prevalence and Impact of Online Trolling of UK Members of Parliament, in the Journal of Computers and Human Behaviour. The paper was written in collaboration with Dr. Shazia Akhtar from the University of Hertfordshire. So, best behavior, Derek.
I'm doing my best, Mary. In fact, I won't even insult the subjects of this particular paper, who are politicians, and normally we might find them deserving of scorn, but Professor Morrison has done an amazing task here and made them seem human in my eyes.
Are you allowed to insult UK politicians? I thought you'd have to just stick to, like, Canadian ones.
Can we just insult all of them with a giant paintbrush?
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Okay, let's not insult any of them.
Okay.
This particular paper I found really interesting because it's dealing with something that I don't know that I've ever really associated it with politicians in this sense, although obviously it makes sense to do so.
I felt like that. I mean, I guess it's sort of a kind of welfare area that I hadn't really considered before, like political elites, political actors in that way. But I was kind of more interested almost in the actual kind of definition of kind of trolling and sort of what trolling is and how we sort of deal with that. And then also looking at this kind of small group of quite interesting and unique people and how it's sort of enacted on that. Have you ever been trolled before, Derek?
I don't normally engage with social media all that much. I mean,
really?
You're always
on it though. Doing like, okay, people write stuff about you. Maybe maybe that's kind of a sort of form of trolling, I guess.
I guess so. I haven't noticed anyone being particularly mean to me. Not that I'm inviting this. Let's back off
well,
from
let's
that
start
very,
now.
Very quickly. I don't know. How about you? I mean, I don't pay attention, which I think is maybe my strategy.
I mean, I guess the issue is that I'm not really interesting enough or doing enough online to be trolled or doing anything that might elicit that kind of behavior, rather. So I guess this is why it's quite relevant to study this group of people, in a sense.
Okay, now we're lucky enough to have Catriona here, so we should probably be asking her about this type of thing.
Absolutely. Catriona, could you please give us an overview of your paper and maybe talk about the topic and the main argument, please?
Thank you, and thank you so much for inviting me. It's a great opportunity. I love the banter, and I love podcasts, and I've never been on a podcast before. So,
welcome.
This is a really great opportunity, and it's always nice to talk about your own work, of course. So this paper, it focuses on UK members of Parliament and their experiences of being trolled. I think one of the things that we have to take into consideration is that the paper was published in 2019, so data were collected maybe 2018. We did publish the paper quite rapidly because it was of great interest, and it was snapped up by a reputable journal. And so I will tell you a bit of the backstory in a minute. But basically, you know, the outcome was that there was a really good engagement from UK members of parliament. They're very interested in that topic. That's going back 5 years. If we think about what has happened in that period of time, there have been the murders of UK MPs. There have been, threats to their lives and whatever. So the landscape, even in that time, has changed. So when we published the paper, when we did the research, you know, we asked people about how they their experiences were of being trolled. Were the trolling experiences in relation to, you know, we cut it down into various segments. Was it sexual stuff? Was it personal? Was it professional? Was it about their political allegiances and whatever? And then what we also looked at was the difference between male and female MPs, looked at those kind of demographics. So there was a really rich seam of data that came out of all of this. And what we tried to do in the paper, and it's quite a succinct paper, I hope, was to distill all of this information so that we got very clear outputs about what we thought, people were feeling and what we thought the risks were. And, as psychologists, the psychological impacts and possible preventive measures we could think about going forward.
And repercussions, right? So the
massive repercussions. So, you know, people saying that they didn't socialize, that they protected their home, their families.
Yeah. Very real costs, right? Because then they
really
secure some sort of services to do this.
Absolutely. And, MPs are quite fortunate in that they have to some extent, they have resources to protect themselves. But nonetheless, I would say, just looking at the political landscape now in the UK, there are many politicians going, will I go up for re-election? Because they look at the experiences of their colleagues in recent years and they're thinking, this is not worth it for my personal safety, for the safety of my family. And it's not just about their, these things get very personal. I don't know if anybody's aware, but in the past couple of weeks, there's been an issue with a UK politician, Diane Abbott, who was vilified on account of the fact that she's a black woman. And she's now seeking protection around that. So there are multifaceted issues around the vulnerability, I think. You know, we do see MPs as being people that, you know, we love to hate and whatever, but they're in a very vulnerable group.
That's interesting in that a lot of the sort of examples you just gave are things that have happened since the publication of this paper,
yes.
Since 2019.
Yes.
And you gather the data in 2018. Mm. So what was happening around that time that inspired you to tackle this topic, inspired you to do this topic? Because something must have been sort of brewing that you noticed around 2018, 19 that inspired this.
Well, Mary, this is an interesting story. Give you a bit of background. I think the reason I came into this is that about eight years before, I'd published some work on internet addiction. So I'd published some stuff on, people's unhealthy relationships with the internet. And as a consequence of that, and my psychology research is quite diverse, it has to be said. So I've done language, which Derek and I talk about, and I've done memory and all kinds of stuff. And then I was sitting at home one Friday afternoon and, just being on the line to certain BBC reporters. And so somebody called me up on a Friday afternoon from the BBC and they said, now we're doing this thing on the Sunday morning politics show about trolling. So it was the BBC that approached me with it. And I said to them, do you know what? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know anything about It's not my, I've done a little bit on internet addiction. I don't know much about trolling. And the producer was quite persistent and basically said to me, "We're a bit desperate." And we've got this Sunday morning programme.
Oh, we've all had those calls.
Have you had, you know, the kind of call where they go like, "Listen, we've got nobody. It's Friday afternoon. And, you know, we're in a bit of a fix. So please, would you come on this Sunday morning programme and talk about trolling?" I'm like, okay. So I spent the whole of Saturday researching and, you know, and thinking, what am I going to wear? And all of that stuff as well. And I think I behaved decently on the Sunday morning live TV show. And in the immediate wake of that, an MP, a UK MP, contacted me and said, "So now you're the UK expert on internet trolling."
You had a full Saturday to become that.
I was like, "No, I'm no."
So here's a quick question,
yeah,
if you don't mind, because my understanding of trolling may not be the same as the definition that you're using in the article. I always thought of trolling as those who are simply looking for a reaction. Is that correct? Or because you've demonstrated here that there's a very potential correlation between trolling and action.
Yes.
But maybe not by the same individuals. I'm just trying to get this sorted out.
Yeah, I think so. The trolls are, and you know, I think labeling as well, we need to be careful about that terminology. But the people who engage in that kind of behavior, they are doing it with a kind of a feeling of, you know, they have a cloak of anonymity. In fact, I think what most of us recognize nowadays is that, you know, you can get your IP address and, you know, most people can be tracked down. They are doing it. What our and other research suggests is that a means of, you know, anonymously expressing something, getting attention. It is about attention seeking, which is ironic because, you know, they want to be anonymous at the same time. It is true, the research suggests and the data suggests that trolling can be the start. In the same way that if you think about other aggressive behaviours, it can be the start of something that leads to really bad actions. And, you know, we've seen it with UK MPs who've been assassinated. So we know that behaviours can escalate as well. It's complex. And I think there are certain psychological characteristics that align with being a troll and features that associate. So it's more common, for example, in young men than in women. So, trolls who have other characteristics. I mean, I'm stating the obvious, and psychologists often do say, "Well, you know, you don't need a PhD," but, you know, trolls are introverts, they are isolated. At the same time, as attention seeking, tend to be male more than female. So there's and since I've done the research as well, I know it's really mushroomed. So we were doing it at the very early stages. Back to your question, Mary, about, you know, it wasn't actually so much of a thing then.
Really?
Yeah.
I was fascinated to see that you state at one point in the paper that actually the published research about this at this time in 2018-19 was actually really limited.
It was really limited.
And I'm so surprised by that because it seems like such a major established phenomenon now.
Well, because one of the things that you do when you engage in any research project, what's the first thing you do? You go and you do your literature search and you see what's going on. Like I did on the Saturday afternoon, going, "I'm going to have to talk about this on telly tomorrow."
That's how academics academic careers get stopped.
Do you know what? There we go. I'm an example of that. So there wasn't a lot on it. And at that time also, and actually then the year after it had been published, we went to the Houses of Parliament, which is one of the most glamorous things you can ever do. I'd never been there. And, you know, I'd been outside and taken pictures. But when you go into the Houses of Parliament, it's like going to, I would imagine, Buckingham Palace or something. You get invited into this beautiful environment and everything. And we gave a talk it was called the APPG, the All Party Parliamentary Group on Psychology in Westminster. And so we talked to them about the data. And at that time, that must have been a year later, I think there were only two people in the UK who had been convicted of internet trolling offences. So actually, the legislation was still at that time catchy. You know, you couldn't, back in the days, be convicted of an offence that related to the internet. So what's interesting about this paper in context, I think, is the fact that it's a wee tiny paper, you know, it's a small amount of data, but it is making a contribution to this much bigger picture of how we need to deal with that kind of behaviour, how society can deal with it, and the law can deal with it as well. So I would like to think, although it's a very modest wee paper, that, you know, it's playing a part in that bigger discussion.
But shocking in the sense that all of your respondents had received online trolling,
yes,
even at this point.
Indeed, Derek, that's a really good point. And actually, so out of, there are 652 MPs currently in the UK. Things will change, but there are 652. And we got about 370, so about half of them, let's say, responded. The people who didn't respond, we did get some messages back from them to say, I'm not going to engage with this survey because it hasn't happened to me. So there we are. Some people were just like, this is something I don't recognise. And MPs are very busy people. And when we think about research and we think about the data we get and how we, represent it, evaluate it and publish it, you've got to put that disclaimer on it. It is the people who are willing to engage with that. Subsequent to the publication, I think it was the Cheltenham Science Festival, maybe 2020. And I did a presentation there with the MP, Jess Phillips. Now, for those in the UK, Jess Phillips is a very prominent Labour female MP. She's very vocal. She does a lot of stuff to do with women's rights. And she and I were on a platform together, and she's very passionate about the whole issue around trolling. She was very keen to promote this issue. There's so many people responded. Everybody who did respond said they had been affected. I would be really interested actually to revisit the subject now and say, I would reckon we would get more people responding to the survey now. And it's a lesson for us as researchers as well. It's like, maybe if we'd framed it in a slightly different way, we could have got even more engagement with it. But we think that, you know, like half of the MPs in the UK, it's not bad.
No, it was amazing, the response rate. Mm. I had a slight question about what you might call a selection bias, a respondent bias.
Yes, indeed.
But even if that's the case, the simple fact that huge number of people at this point were getting this frequency of trolling behavior is quite stunning.
It is.
And social media, I think, is then almost a double-edged sword here, right? So the MPs feel that they must engage with it in order to have a communication with their constituents or the public at large, but it carries with it this kind of very real, underbelly, nasty side to it.
It is. And, I'm impressed with how people deal with it and choose. A very good character in the Twitter domain is Hugh Grant, the actor Hugh Grant, who calls himself Hacked Off Hugh. And, you know, he tweets about his experiences with trolling and bad behaviour by the media and so on. I think you have to be very brave and very resilient. And back to your question at the start, Mary, I have once been trolled.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it wasn't anything to do with it was just a Facebook thing where I'd posted something that I thought, well, okay, here's my interpretation. I think it was trolling. I posted something about it's International Women's Day, and some anonymous a friend of a friend of a friend said, "What's the big deal about?" Well, what are we talking about women for? And it went further than that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, block.
Well, that actually happens all the time for International Women's Day here on social media as well, where people suddenly will say, well, what about International Men's Day, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. What made you define that incident as trolling?
Yeah, that's
sense, a good question. What's the difference between, I don't know, somebody just being mean? Mm-hmm. Or being a bit provocative, then actual trolling.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? I don't have a sort of scientific definition of it. What I would say is just my reaction was, I don't know you. You are invading my space. I'm just mentioning something that is, I regard, fairly innocent, and you're making me feel threatened or bad. Yeah, I wish I had a scientific definition for my reaction in that case, but I just thought instinctively, I thought this is just bad behavior and I have to sort of remove you.
Mm. Is it a kind of relational proximity then? Mm. Because would you react the same way if, say, your male cousin had have posted the same thing and then you could feel like you're engaging in a dialogue of some sort?
Yeah, that's true.
Was it a dialogue or was it just one comment?
No, it was just one of these kind of like, you know, you just think you've sat up too late, had a few beers and decided that you want to...
Because I often saw trolling as something that would have kind of gone on over time, like where somebody sort of comes back, where there's a kind of harassment element.
Well, it's certainly true that trolls are looking for a reaction.
Right.
They are looking for a reaction. So that's definitely the case. Back to their nature, they're sitting alone in their room and they are firing stuff off. You'll see many cases as well where now people are being identified and they're totally in shame about what they've done. They don't recognise that. Well, they do recognise now when they've been pulled up for it. They don't think that they're doing something that is reprehensible and damaging. However, the psychological characteristics are worrisome because what might you do? What might you do next? Hmm.
Well, I think, to go back to how I started, now I'm regretting what I said at the beginning, because to dehumanize someone or to not fundamentally recognize the other person on the other side of that screen is probably the first step, or at the very least to allows you to kind of throw things at them that you would never consider doing face to face. Or even one question I had or one comment, I don't know if it's a question, I because you looked at different kinds of media that you could potentially be a troll in. And in a kind of traditional sense, I guess you could mail things to someone and be a troll.
Yes.
Or
yes.
You could yell at them in the street and be a troll or things like that. Do you think that there's proportional levels of what the shock creation would be based on that platform or modality? Does that question make sense?
The shock from the receiver, the victim of the...
Right, yeah. So if someone were to yell at you on the street, that's a visceral shock, right? Whereas, the kind of, there's someone on YouTube making nasty comments. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, unfortunately, that's too frequent.
I think that is really interesting because these kinds of, there are people who engage in this kind of bad behavior in lots of ways. Face to face is, you see with our MPs data, very rare. Face to face, you've got to be pretty brazen to do that. And then you get that, you do get the that visceral and physical reaction. So the interesting thing with trolls is they're not necessarily going to get any reaction. I don't think they're looking for any reaction at all. From a psychologist's point of view, it's like, I just don't think the trolls consider this to any extent at all. They don't know what they're doing to their... So it's the action of sending that satisfies them. They're not looking for a reaction.
Is that true? That's really interesting, because that sort of goes against some of the kind of sort of common sort of lore about this, in that you feel like, you know, oh, don't feed the troll.
That's a common
internet kind of slogan. If you give something back, it'll kind of keep coming.
Well, that's,
you say they're not looking for that.
Well, I don't think they're looking for it, to a large part. But one of the things that we did in our study was we did ask people, how do you respond? With MPs, they're interesting because they call them staffers. And some people just would get their staff to read all stuff, and the staff would go like, don't show that to her. It's going to. And then, you know, other people would read some of it, all of it, whatever. So there are different extents to which, you know, the MPs would get access to the information and the reactions that they had to the information. And we said to the MPs, so not quite answering your question, our focus was on the victim side of things and how they dealt with it. So do you respond? Do you block? You know, what do you do? And there was a whole variety of ways of dealing with it. From a psychological point of view, I think it's partly, it's a personal thing. What can I deal with? What do I want to do? How much am I up for an argument with somebody? That is pointless argument because you're a troll. So we're not going to talk about anything, constructive. That was more the angle that we were coming from. How do the victims feel about being trolled? But we took into consideration as well. Yeah, how do they feel? They get satisfaction, I think, yeah, principally from in the act of sending something out there. Mm-hmm. They will, of course, be looking for a response. I can guess that some people quite enjoy the fact that they get blocked. That could, you know, I've had, yeah, they block me. They don't, and you can see that on Twitter all the time, can't you? I mean, I'm not a massive Twitter person, but you can see people going, I've blocked so-and-so now.
Don't be sorry at all. This is also highly gendered though, isn't it?
Yes.
So I was looking at the responses here, and of course, all through it's highly gendered.
Yeah.
But just to pick up from what you were saying in terms of responding, none of the female respondents read in full, whereas almost half of the, well, basically half of the male respondents do read it in full, and almost none of the female respondents read and respond.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas about getting close to half of the male respondents will read and respond.
This was particularly interesting, I thought. Yeah, this kind of gendered, the gendered division of the findings. Mm. But also talking about that as to how the female and male MPs engage with it differently.
Yes.
It's also reported, and I sort of highlighted this when I was reading our article, that the male MPs report significantly, and significantly is in italics here, more abuse than women, contrary to what might have been thought in that way, what might have been predicted. But I guess that ties into the fact that women are less likely to engage with this. Is that because it's sort of tied into wider narratives about misogyny? And so you just recognize this wider narrative and are just like, well, there's not really much point in engaging with this. Can you talk us through those differences and why you think they exist?
Well, that's a big, big question.
We can solve it all here.
I know. How long have we got? 5 minutes. So I think, you know, there is a big gulf between men and women on both sides of it, you know, so men much more likely to troll than women are. And then women react very different. At least our women MPs who responded, let's keep it in context, they react very differently. I think in terms of the reality of it, in the past, 10 years, we've had, two MPs have been assassinated, one man and one woman. So, men are as much at risk. I think our perception of the responses we got was that men take it more lightly than women do. They go like, oh, come on, I'm gonna say something back there. They also, in relation to that, the kind of trolling that men experience was different to women. So it's more sort of, masculinized sort of in relation to their sexual relationships or whatever. Women, much more personal stuff. The male MPs didn't report feeling that their family was threatened as much as the women did. They didn't feel that their social life had been affected or changed. They hadn't had to make adjustments in their social life. So it's very interesting. For me, just when you kind of like, distill the data and look at it on balance, you think, my perception is that the men were not so bothered as the women were. For the women,
Was that why at one point in the paper you sort of highlight the fact that the purpose of the abuse towards the women MPs was about delegitimizing them, was about kind of removing them from the political sphere, which was something I guess did not exist in the abuse towards the male MPs, as sort of horrendous as it still is.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept of delegitimizing. I think that's true. I think it was more fundamental about the sense of, and when we looked at the qualitative comments, I don't think we included those in the paper, but it was more personal stuff about, what's the point? What are you doing in Parliament and that sort of issue? So, the men didn't seem to have that perspective on it at all, or to focus on those kinds of approaches to the trolling.
What was interesting to me when you start to drill down in the kind of male versus female responses here is, yes, there are quite a number of statistically significant differences in the various responses. But then there are some categories in which there are no cases of one of the sexes getting certain kinds of response. And so the effects of this, for example, no male respondent said it created problems with their friends or family.
Yeah.
Whereas it was about a quarter of the female respondents said, because of trolling, this has caused me problems with my friends and family.
Yeah. I know. It's shocking, really, isn't it? And it's kind of like, we're in a period in the UK where we're coming up to the next general election, and there are real question marks over, who is brave enough to stand. And so this is just MPs, though, isn't it? What we would have loved to have done is to broaden it out to, other public figures. And then actually one of the, not a complete tangent, but I talked about this a few years ago in Yorkshire to school teachers. And the school teachers said to me, all our kids are being trolled. They're all... we use the word trolling. We have to be careful about it, but they're all
being
experiencing.
Bullied, yeah,
they've been. They're experiencing
the trolling coming from each other.
I didn't ask that many questions, but kids are scared of their phone because they don't know what's coming in on the text or Facebook or whatever TikTok or, you know, so it's not the data that we're talking about now, very interesting data from a select group of people who chose to respond. And we always have to be careful about that. What about the other 300 MPs who weren't bothered to participate or didn't have the time? So that's UK MPs. Those data are from 6 years ago. If we think about how things have developed since then, it is wider public figures. Now, the thing is with MPs and any other person, including Hugh Grant, who's in the you know, he's out there in social media as a public figure, to an extent, they have to be prepared for it and they have to accept that, you know, and they all have their profiles and whatever. So, you know, you have to ask that question as well. If you're going to be an MP or an actor or whatever, you have to put yourself out there. So you have to have a bit of an armour and decide how you're going to deal with this sort of behaviour.
Yeah, I agree with that. Occasionally, when my research has been noticed by something kind of high level publication, then you suddenly do get all of this attention. And,
yes.
And
yes.
There is critique within that.
Yeah.
Not all of it is nice attention. And you do, I think, sort of in that tiny insight I've had, sort of do have to learn to be okay with that.
Yeah, you do. You do. I know. And it's, you kind of get seduced by people asking you questions, and then you realise that you have to be very careful about how you present yourself and what you say and what editorial control you have over what you say, because, you know, the next, I found myself on one occasion, it was to do with my previous research on internet addiction, and I once did a round of, it all got splashed by, I was working at Leeds University in the UK at the time, and Leeds University, they just did this splash, went out to all the media outlets and everything, and I did an interview. There were so many interviews going on, I didn't really clock who I was speaking to. And the following morning, I got on the bus. And in the UK, there's a free newspaper that goes on all the buses and trains. And I was the cover.
Whoa!
I am not kidding you. Well, I mean,
now, were you immediately picking it up and holding it up and then slipping it down?
Yeah, well, luckily my picture wasn't on it, but it was Dr. Katrina Morrison sees this, you know, so I'm the cover. And then people are texting me going, you know, you're on the cover of the Metro.
So that's a really famous one then. You know.
Well, do you know what? I have to say, I'm not modest about it. I put it in a frame.
Excellent.
Yeah, I put it in a frame and it's sitting in my garage. But you know, you have to be so careful when, we're not glamorous people. We're not in the public eye, but you know, if you publish something
that Derek's pretty glamorous.
I'm sorry. I spoke in haste. It's true. That is true. Certainly the most glamorous amongst us.
I have my doubts.
Well, equal, meaning equal.
We're talking all sort of about how significant the findings are and how kind of further they can go. Did you have an inkling when you were actually conducting the research for this paper that this was something that was going to become significant? Because I sort of imagine you, as you have sort of all of these responses pouring in and as you have this kind of high response rate among, you know, political actors that may usually be difficult to access for research. Did you have a sort of inkling that actually this is going to become really significant in a few years?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because often with research, you know, you think, oh, I'm just going to look at some people's responses to words. And it's very modest and whatever. And you know, most of the time in research, you are ploughing your own very specific furrow, and you're while it's very important and you realise how it's contributing to the discipline, you know, most of the time I've had a sense that I've got a very wee small part in all of this, and you know,
and
it's useful,
okay.
And
that's
that
okay.
Is it's more than okay, it's brilliant, but you know, but with this it was slightly different because of the origins of it and whatever, and then engaging, you know, this member of parliament phoning me up and going, you must come and do some research, and you know, I'll circulate this, and then you know, being invited to the Houses of Parliament and everything. So Maybe I was seduced by the glamour of it, but it did. It was very seductive. But also, I think that you know, when I reflect on it now, at that particular time, there still wasn't that much understanding about trolling. There weren't that many convictions for trolling. And so I do feel that when you look at that wee paper now in its context, it's contributed a good deal to people's understanding and attitude towards trolling behaviour.
So a quick question about this, with the seduction of Parliament and all. Do you think that this particular... I guess the scope of the phenomenon, or the scale of it, the type of it, is that because of the parliamentary system? Is that the vulnerability of an MP needing to appeal to constituents in order to be voted in, so that if you have an opponent who tweets or zeets or whatever you're calling it now, and you've got your social media site, and the other person doesn't, that they're vulnerable in some way to get elected?
Yeah, I mean, it's just so interesting, isn't it, with many of these public figures, you know, beyond, well, I was going to say beyond parliamentarians, but, you know, somebody like Donald Trump and all of these people who have to...
Plus his own media platform,
yeah,
right? I mean, that's shocking.
Yeah, I mean, it's... nowadays, you just do have to be out there, don't you? You have to be on some kind of platform to have any kind of recognition. It's it can go in different directions for you, but you have to be... I don't know about how you are, but I will say the first thing I do in the morning is I have a wee look through what's going on Twitter and just find out what's... Am I allowed to say that?
Well, there's no copyright to this particular podcast, I don't...
Not think yet.
Yet. Oh, you... when I first moved to Malaysia, where I met Mary initially, they were super big on social media and immediately said, oh, Derek, you've got to get set up on Twitter and you have to start doing this and that. Mm-hmm. And within a couple of months, there was a hashtag that was trending. Which
Derek
was,
Owen. Hashtag Derek Owen.
No, hashtag Derek doesn't tweet. So all of them were, whenever they would say something about me or something that we were doing, they would say, did you, oh, Derek doesn't tweet.
Well, do you know, I don't tweet, but I do watch a lot and I get a lot of information from there. Mm. But then a few months ago as well, before I left the UK, I thought, oh, what's this TikTok thing? And so I get my phone and I get on TikTok and I've got a 19-year-old daughter called Georgia. So Derek and I share that in common, that we both have daughters called Georgia. And I said to my daughter, Georgia, I said, hey, look at my phone. I've got TikTok. And she went, she went, Mum, you're too old.
Mortified.
She was more, went, Mum, no, I don't know. Not at your age.
See, this is our next, after we're finished this podcast, we can start
TikTok videos.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. On maybe the actual subject of trolling, maybe then.
Yeah.
Has there been, thank you all, has there been any criticism of this article? Have you been trolled about this article? Have you been critiqued in any way?
Yeah, that's another good question, Mary. And do you know what? Actually, not about this article, as far as nothing that's come to my attention, which is good. I did have a subsequent paper which was on memory, a very, you know, very different topic, and I have had a lot of trouble with papers where there's been massive critiques and you're wrong about this and you know, so I have experienced that in my publishing career, that and actually, do you know what, that is part of the point of publishing. So listen, you know, if nobody is bothered about it, it's not going to get cited. It's not going to have any traction and it's not going to make an impact. The very first paper I published, and I won't tell you what year it was, but the very first paper I published...
it can't be as old as Derek's first paper.
Oh my goodness. My poor publication record speaks otherwise, but go ahead.
might be a couple of years after DedX, possibly, but it was a lot. It wasn't in this millennium, let's just put it that way. And my PhD super, I was doing my PhD supervisor said, he said, you got the data wrong here. He said, no, go back, reanalyze. And I was a young PhD student at the time. And I went back to my office. I'm like, oh my, what have I done wrong? You know, I'm going to reanalyze. It's still the same result. It's still the same. So I went back to him the following week. I said, it's still the same. And you know what? It was a very interesting sort of moment where, not quite eureka moment, but you could just see him, his expression changed and he went, we've got something here. So,
oh, wow. Okay. So there's,
you know, because I was saying, no, my data don't fit with the other stuff that, you know, the perceived, you know, the received opinion that's been, you know, papers that have been published for the past 20 or 30 years. And yeah, all of a sudden he just went, I think there might be something in this. It was very controversial. But it was a really nice achievement. And although I'm fed up with it now, I think that paper still gets cited like maybe once a year. It was at the time people were going, no. And then they were collecting their own data or reanalyzing their own data. And lo and behold, it actually, you know, it's a simple statistical thing, really. But it's really good to publish something that's controversial because, you know, that gets...
I agree.
Yeah. I don't mind too much. If it's unpopular or...
There's a difference between unpopular and controversial.
And controversial. There is. Yeah. If it makes people... engage with a discussion or even an argument, then, you know, that's what science is all about. That's what academic study is all about.
But in actuality, I think trolling is a bit different than that kind of response, right? So anonymity is definitely part of trolling.
Yes. Mm.
So here's my pointed question. Is reviewer two a troll?
Mm-hmm.
Because the reviewers get to hide behind anonymity.
Yes. They do.
And so I don't know what the response is. You've got, I was joking with a colleague today that sometimes reviewer two, it seems highly personal. You know, you'll get these respondents that, you know, it's all good, but then you'll get. Something.
That is why I always sign off my reviews because I just think that to, you know, in the process of academic publication, you get the good, the bad and the ugly and you read some reviews and you think, why and how are you allowed to say this? Mm-hmm. And I think it's quite harsh territory. I think it is incumbent upon journals and editors really to manage these situations and not allow reviewers that kind of... Reviewers have remarkable authority and responsibility.
And sometimes exercised without that much care.
You know, and you think, did you actually read my paper? Because it didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
Or it did say what you're asking me to say.
Oh, that's even worse.
And you didn't read it, obviously.
I know. That's on page 3.
That kind of comes back to one of the defining sentences in this article for me, which is, and I quote, trolling is a conceptually fuzzy term. And you sort of feel
it's a good get out
of deal. Yeah, I love that one. But in the past kind of 5-6 years since this has actually been published, you would think, oh, it's less fuzzy. But it actually probably seems to be more fuzzy because we're now saying, could a reviewer be a troll? In essence, could it be this? Does it have to be this in some way? So I imagine this is a definition that really is going to keep changing as we go.
You're absolutely right. It's fascinating, isn't it? I think that things have moved on a huge amount. And actually, my co-author, Shazia, and I, she's at University of Hertfordshire, UK. And she and I have talked about follow-ups and stuff. And, you know, we're like, yeah, we'll do that next month. And we've never quite done it. Things will have moved along a lot. I would really like to update myself with what the state of the literature is. Whether it's still appropriate even to use the term troll, because it's quite a loaded term and I think it has some misunderstandings as well. It was the right thing at that time I'm not sure how people would regard it now. But as I say, you know, since that time, I think there are many more MPs will find themselves, you know, the victims to that kind of behaviour, and beyond MPs, anyone in the public domain, and many of us who are completely anonymous also, you know, if you post the wrong thing, or it's not the wrong thing. Happy Women's Day, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't think that was the wrong thing.
The wrong thing to the wrong person.
They pick it up, you know? So we have to be really mindful of our identity. You know, it's, you know, you're saying, Derek, about, you know, people have to have a Twitter profile and, you know, I suppose we do have to have profiles to a certain extent, but we have to be really careful about what we do with them, and have a bit of armour around us as well, that anything that people can see or get access to makes us vulnerable to positive and negative stuff.
Quick question with a probably not very quick answer. Ostensibly easy solution is to remove the anonymity available to people on the internet.
Yes.
So in the same way that kind of if someone were to insult you face to face or to utter a death threat to you could recognize them, that then has some level of personal responsibility to it.
Yes,
so
yes.
Do you think the removal of this anonymity on some of these social media platforms would be helpful on this front?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely would. And, you know, in our paper that we're talking about, you know, there were very few face-to-face bad behaviours. Back in the old days, before the internet and so on, you know, you would get the poison pen. So that's what MPs used to get in the old days, was anonymous letters. So I think how we do that, I mean, we're in a situation now where we're up against AI, and where does the reality start and stop? I don't know. There are all kinds of conspiracy theories around AI stuff that's been, stuff that's been in the media recently, that people are saying, you know, that was just AI generated. That wasn't real.
Well, and that's the excuse now. But also, on the other hand, people are saying, you know, that wasn't me doing that on video. That was AI.
Exactly so. So it's like, I really hope it's Derek and Mary sitting opposite me.
Well, that's a philosophical conversation.
Are
we really here?
Are we really here? This could all be a simulation.
It could be. It could be.
I really hope it is.
It would explain a lot, wouldn't it? So the big question, you alluded to this. What comes next? Updating this kind of study or expanding it into different realms? What would you like to do with this?
I would really like to do something on a much larger scale. You know, I'd love to go back and revisit the MPs. The profile has all different MPs now than there were 6 years ago. But I'd really like to go back to that. I think we'd get more respondents now. I think people are more engaged because they relate to it. You know, they understand the topic much more than everybody is attuned to it now in a way that I don't think they were 6 years ago. I'd be interested to speak to other high profile people. But on the other hand, they're quite good. People like Hugh Grant, he's great at saying what he thinks. So I don't really need to go to somebody like Hugh Grant. The school children thing that I picked up when I was at University of Bradford a few years ago, and it was the school teachers who said to me, our kids are being, you know, are feeling like they're being trolled. I'd love to look at that a bit more, because I think, you know, particularly in, you know, the sort of early teenage years, there's that sense, from a psychological point of view, your sense of self is really in full scale development. Children are really coming to understand who they are. And they are also at that stage where they've got access to all the technology and they've got profiles and everything. So I would be really interested, actually, mostly, I think, with looking at teenagers and their experience of, you know, let's just to be clear about this, you know, we're talking about trolling and we're talking about the negative. But one of the things that I always say as well is that at least 90% of our use of the internet and these social media tools is positive. So while we do, you know, we do need, you know, there's some really bad stuff, but at the same time, you know, it affords us so many benefits as well. So, and I would like to look at that on balance with teenagers and young adults, I think.
Well, we wish you all the best with that in the future, and we hope that you will come back and discuss it with us and share it with us once again.
I do look forward to that. Yeah, it was a fascinating topic and conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Gina.
Yeah.
With 110 academic staff from 22 countries and regions, the Faculty of Humanities and Social Science is committed to delivering world-class teaching and research, with a growing focus on interdisciplinary projects. Our faculty includes the School of Economics, the School of Education and English, the School of International Communications, and the School of International Studies, as well as the Language Center.
We are committed to internationally renowned and excellent research in a thriving transdisciplinary environment of outstanding individual and collective research. Our faculty is home to a number of groundbreaking projects, including but not limited to digital heritage, game cultures, the historical and contemporary Silk Roads, health economics, cognitive neuroscience of language, and gender studies.
The Faculty of Humanities and Social Science is also proud to host a high percentage of international staff who bring expertise to areas such as history, politics, journalism, media and film studies, education, English, micro and macroeconomics, and more, as well as a wealth of experience from international universities.
We strive to offer an education and student experience reflecting the most up-to-date knowledge and achieve this through the close integration of teaching and research. Our research-led teaching places cutting-edge knowledge at the center of our curriculum, while our academic staff actively engage our students in their ongoing research activities.